They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise me.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Who Shot Ya. It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio, she is right here to my left, host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast. It's Sometimes It Snows in April. April Wolf. April, what is good with you?
Well, I'm going to push up my glasses and just be the film nerd to these three comic geniuses, clearly. This is going to be my role that's going to happen on the show, I think. And I'll just do the nerdy thing and say that what's good is that I discovered some really good poetry.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
By,
exactly.
By whom?
A woman named Else Lasker Schuller. She was a German Jew who was pushed out of Nazi Germany and wrote beautiful love poems. Her whole thing was just writing about love, and I just needed some good things in my life, so I went and found some of the translations, and it's fucking great. And also, it's a really good cheat if you, like, love someone and you don't want to write it yourself, because no one's going to know this obscure German Jewish poetry from 1940s, you know?
Yeah.
So just cheat.
Yeah.
And take it. Steal it.
What about Inga, my German-Jewish girlfriend, who's 80?
Thank you. Thank you.
She's like, I know this.
That sounds like.
Tip more German. I know this.
This reminds me of when I was a young girl.
Schweitzer, come here. Let me talk to you.
This vision of love. This vision. In my own mein Schatz, I have heard such things.
Yes, yes,
I used to hear this poem when I would trade for nylons.
No, that is a World War II joke if I have ever heard one.
Oh, let us welcome back into the building. You heard his voice right there. You know him from Adult Swim's NTSFSD SUV.
What?
Judd Apatow's Funny People.
Come on.
My man is on HBO Season 3 of Animals, though. Ladies and gentlemen, the quickest return guest we've had, Brandon Johnson, is back in the building.
Oh, I can't believe. Thank you so much for having me back.
Welcome
I want to let everybody know I got that Black Klansman merchandise.
No,
hit me up after the show.
On.
I got hoods,
boom.
Satin hoods. Boom. I got wool hoods.
Boom.
I got hoods that will make you famous despite the fact people can't see your face.
Boom. Ooh. Ooh. All on sale. All on sale.
All on sale.
All on sale.
When you see a truck back up to your house, just know Brandon Johnson is selling iron crosses, copper crosses, gold crosses, and silver crosses. Crosses that burn themselves.
Ooh. Fire. Hot fire. Hot fire. Oh, the hoods are in the hood, yo.
Oh, my goodness.
What's up? That's what's up.
Yeah, I got a special Steve Harvey line of hoods. Buy two hoods, get a free briefcase. Come on, this is, I put the UK in merchandise.
Guaranteed to make your family feud.
Boom. Boom. Oh, and that other voice right there, I mean.
Who, me?
Oh, sir? The Big Pun himself? The master of the puns, Big Pun? Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to have. You know him from Grace and Frankie as Bud Bergstein, is that right?
Bergstein, yeah.
Bergstein?
I have not. It's made up. So it's fine.
It's okay.
He is the voice of Tom Servo on Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is also on Netflix right now. You just run a Netflix,
I'm double. They call me Ted Sarando.
Mama, ladies and gentlemen, Baron Vaughn is in the building.
Hey.
Yes.
What's going on?
Baron, what is going on with you? What is good, my friend?
Oh, me? Well, feeling good. Looking better. Especially these stains I got on my sweatpants.
I was gonna say, where'd you get those? Where'd
from a new baby who throws food as babies do.
Ladies and gentlemen, Baron, a new dad, a new father in
That's
the building,
right.
Yo.
And I'm already killing it, doing way better than my dad because I'm still here.
You're still in the picture.
Still here.
Still in the picture.
Showing up every time. Every time. We wake up in the same building, me and my son. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That's family right there, yo. That's family, dog. That's family, yo. That's what's up.
That's true.
Well, thanks for being here, man.
I'm happy to be here. This is already fantastic. We technically haven't even started.
We haven't said a real goddamn thing.
And I'm already
thing.
Having so much fun.
We're going to do this for an hour. It's going to be great.
Perfect.
It's going to be great. Also want to give a shout out to another guest that is here. This will be the final time that Chuck is with us, yo.
Whoa.
Yes.
Final Chuck. Time.
Yeah, Chuck said too many fucks on air.
Oh, yeah. That's called the Charlie Rocket. The Charlie Rocket. Yeah, I know that. Yeah. Gene Domanian had to deal with that.
It just could not be stopped. Potty mouth.
I've been watching Chuck for about a month now.
Oh, you're dog sitting.
I'm dog sitting. Oh, yes, yes. Okay. This is not my animal. But I will begin. This was kind of like a test to see, like, all right, do we want another one of these, Ricky? Are we ready to be emotionally available? You're goddamn right we are.
So you went through a service.
No, I'm taking care of this for a friend of mine who I work with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My shit is to get one of these dogs, right?
Okay.
Wait for them posters to come up.
Yep.
Figure out whether or not I want to foster, and then turn that dog back in for $50 to $100.
Oh. You're flipping dogs away.
Yeah. Flipping dogs.
You're like a bait and switch?
I find dogs.
They're just in yards, yo. If you just like go in yards, you just got them there.
I'm like, should I be a parent?
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Ricky, what's good?
Oh, thank you for asking me, April. I appreciate that. What is good is I was driving in, and I couldn't get my goddamn, audio to work to just, like, listen to music. And I'm, like, pushing buttons, and I'm not hearing anything. And I just yell, fuck. And it was like Marty, you know, like when Marty can't get, like, the DeLorean to start in Back to the Future. I was like, fuck. And I hit it, and those beautiful fucking filtered synth sounds of Daft Punk's Voyager started playing, and I was just like, here we go.
Yeah.
This is what I need
spiritual
right now.
Spiritual moment.
Oh, bro, it was great.
So you solved it with violence, I guess.
No. That's the root of toxic masculinity.
I mean, it is. I'm just like, here with three men today. No. It's just going to be like this, isn't it?
This is the flip side to last week. Last week it was three women
right? Poor guy was cornered. I'm so sorry.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
You eat it up. That's right.
Yeah. Speaking of things we love, today we are talking about one of my favorite directors' new movie, Spike Lee's Black Klansman. We are going to be talking about Spike Lee and his oeuvre, his collection of movies, his career. And as always, we will have our staff picks for you. But before we get into all that, it's our new segment of the show called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. I will read a news blurb or segment. Anybody on the panel will jump in with just by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? So I'm going to go ahead and start off with this first one. This was a huge story that happened last week. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced a new category for the Oscars. It is called Outstanding Achievement in Popular Film. The category is meant to honor those films that people loved but wouldn't necessarily be awarded at the Oscars. There's been a huge amount of backlash to the announcement, but there are some supporters out there. Producer Jason Blum of Blumhouse, they released Get Out, is quoted in Variety as saying, "The Academy Awards have to be entertaining to watch, and I really think they took a step in the right direction with this." Actor Mark Wahlberg, Academy Award nominee, Mark Wahlberg.
Hate crime specialist. Mark Wahlberg.
Yes.
Yeah, that's his SVU, isn't it? Yeah.
It's on the resume. I'm just reading what's on the resume.
Me too.
I saw it. Mark Wahlberg also supported the movie. He said, maybe if they'd had the category before, we'd have won a couple of them. Is this important? Do you all care?
Personally, I think we should abolish the Academy Awards.
Oh, okay. I like this take.
Don't
like ice first and then the ice, Academy Awards.
Ice and then Ampus.
Okay.
I know my priorities. Ice is first.
How do we know ice is not a part of the Academy Awards?
That's true.
That's what I've been saying.
They have to refute it. Because they're like, wait, hold on a second.
Oh, goodness. I wouldn't doubt that actually happened. It's just Outstanding Achievement for a Popular Movie sounds like it's the subtitle for the Academy Awards itself.
Yeah, right.
Because isn't that the whole point of the Academy Awards? It is a popularity contest.
Yes.
And it's sort of like, I know that a lot of people are like, this is a ratings grab sort of a thing. They want people to tune in. Mm-hmm. So if, Transformers 18 is nominated for an award, I guess that makes them think that people will then watch to see if it wins, which I think is not true. because you can just get an alert on the news or look at Twitter and find out who won what. And no sweat lost on that situation. But it's also kind of like with this popular movie thing. I mean, I guess I'm curious as to what it is that would even fit into this category. Like, what are the parameters that make a popular movie? Is it a certain amount of screens? Is it, like, how much they grossed? Is it, you know, how many weird accents Johnny Depp is doing? You hear about Johnny Depp's new movie? Ooh, is he wearing a wig and got a new accent? You know it. I'm there.
How many bracelets is he rocking in this picture?
Exactly, because it's also like, man, it's funny that, like, the popular movies want this recognition because $500 billion is not enough recognition. Right. We got all the money, but if I just had that statue, right. I could finally sleep at night.
I think it's like, if you look at the people who are supporting it, I think we know what this means.
Ooh,
it means,
snap. Break it down, April.
I mean,
if you look at who that person's mama is, you can see why the haircut looks like that.
Oh, you don't know why he's wearing his shirt?
You don't know why his shoes is on the wrong feet?
Yeah.
Well, here is his dad.
That's his dad right over there.
It's always about the parents.
Right.
I just think that, like, with the popular movie stuff, they want people to watch. They should just get better fucking hosts.
Yep.
I mean, make it an actual good variety show that has some awards that honor some good movies. I mean, I tune in when I know that I want one movie to wallop another one. Like, when I was waiting for Moonlight to win over La La Land, I was just like, I am watching this riveted, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why I tune in. Mm-hmm. But the host would be really great. Just anyone who entertains you at all.
Well, yeah, they seem so dedicated to this tradition, the pageantry of it. I'm just like, switch it up. Do something completely different, people will watch.
Yeah.
You have a 50-year-old style that you have on the screen. That's why nobody's watching it, maybe.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Next one I can take.
Yeah, thank you.
There's been a ton of rumors going around that Idris Elba will be the next James Bond.
King Drees.
How true are those rumors? Apparently not very. Last week, an interview ran in the Daily Star with director Antoine Fuqua. In it, he had claimed to have talked to a Bond producer that said that Idris starring as James Bond, quote, will happen eventually. I don't know what that means, though. A representative for Fuqua then said that this was not true. Adding to the confusion is Idris Elba, who posted a picture of himself on Twitter with the caption saying, quote, my name's Elba, Idris Elba. He's really... Okay, and then he followed it up with the post, quote, don't believe the hype. So for now, it seems like Idris Elba will not be the next James Bond, and they just want to fuck with us. So is this important, and do you care?
I know, like, I'm tired of being teased of this monumental change that's going to happen when we have a James Bond that's not white anymore. Like, put a motherfucker in that role or don't talk to me about it. They keep acting like we might do it. Like, motherfucker, it's 2018. Like, if you can't figure that shit out by now, here's an idea. Just give me an original spy movie with a black lead in it.
There you go.
I'll take that. I also don't need to keep waiting for another James Bond movie. Like, where the fuck is my Undercover Brother sequel?
You know? That's true. Malcolm.
You.
Ridley, get on that.
Yeah,
Let me get this straight. He's going to be James Bond. He's going to drive someplace?
Yes.
So all his missions would get interrupted because he's going to get pulled over.
Yeah.
There's no way. They need a car.
You got a broken taillight. Oh, do I? Oh.
Right.
The Queen's English.
Right.
We weren't expecting that.
Right. Exactly.
You can go. And that's the whole movie.
I know, his mission, your mission, drive a Jaguar across town.
It's also like... I mean, maybe this is a weird statement to make, but isn't James Bond a movie that's really about an empire sad that it's no longer an empire?
Yeah.
Damn.
Isn't it about, like, the British Secret Service? They used to rule the world. Now they don't. But we don't need that. We got one badass.
Yeah.
Isn't that the whole point?
That's exactly where that series is right now. Yeah.
So it's kind of like...
That's where Idris. It went. But, I mean, like, the original is not... Like, you know, like the books, it's not really like that.
Yeah.
And what are the books like? Have you read those books?
Yeah.
Ian Fleming, right?
Yeah, Ian Fleming. I had read those books. The weirdest thing is people are saying, why would there be a black James Bond? But if they had even read the first book, the first mission that this James Bond character goes on is undercover in the Caribbean. Like, he's supposed to pass... in the Caribbean, like as a Scottish man. It's so weird. So I don't understand. It's so weird.
I'm from the Caribbean.
Oh, Caribbean. Totally excited to be here in the Caribbean.
Which one of you guys was going to patch the duchy?
Pull my left hand side.
That's the one I can't even do with Sean Connery. But you. Oh, that's right. Didn't Ian Fleming live in the Caribbean or something like that?
Yeah, he did. Hmm. He lived somewhere down there.
That's why he was all obsessed
with it. Maybe the Bahamas? Bahamanian? Is that how you say it?
Bahamanian, yeah.
Bahamanian?
Person from the Bahamas? Like Rihanna?
Bahamadia?
Those dudes.
Bahamadeus?
Bahamadeus?
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
All right.
That's interesting.
No.
You guys, it's so interesting what we're talking about. What? Big, what is it? Did I say something?
Yeah. Big pun is here, y'all. I told y'all.
Sorry.
I told y'all.
I got one more.
Okay. All right. Story. Come on with it.
How many times have you tried to stream... I don't know if this might be a rhetorical question.
I'm going to answer it.
Okay, I have no idea. I felt like you might, so I was like, okay, I'm just going to prepare you. How many times have you tried to stream True Lies online and not been able to find it anywhere?
Sunday.
Every Sunday.
Well, screenwriter John August feels your pain. He has begun to compile a list of the most popular films not available online anywhere. The growing list covers English language movies from 1980 to 2016. Hmm. That placed among the top 100 earners at that year's domestic box office. Some of the interesting titles on this list include... Oh, really? Oh, sorry.
You're even shocked. You're even shocked yourself.
Yeah, so they include Cocoon, The Abyss, Wild at Heart, and To Live and Die in L.A.
Hmm. Mm.
I was surprised. Like, for some reason, I was just like, Cocoon's not available for every person over, like, 50 or 60.
Oh,
are people that age still streaming? I mean, I know that,
maybe they're not.
There's still the proliferation of the internet and stuff, but it's like older people still seem to not be like, what channel is Netflix? Is still like a question I've gotten asked by an older relative.
Yeah.
Nobody? Nobody's felt that. And if you're hankering for Cocoon, let me recommend Netflix's Grace and Frankie. It's Cocoon with more dildos.
A lot of dildos in Grace and Frankie. A lot of them.
It's interesting. How do movies like this fall through the cracks, though? Like, how does no one...
Don't nobody watch them. I mean, honestly, nobody's watching these movies. But, that's why they're not getting...
But they're in the top 100 grocers, right?
No, like this...
Back in the day.
I mean, they're Publix.
But that's the thing, like...
They're Smith's. They're Ralph's.
Yep.
The 100 grocers? Okay, I'm done.
It's truly just the studios, they just kind of prune and they only take like one or two from that year and they put them... A lot of them are just on VHS. So if you don't make that jump from VHS to DVD, then you're not going to make that jump to streaming.
Oh, yeah.
I had that problem with Switchblade Sisters. There's many movies that I have to find somehow, somewhere, bootlegged on VHS or something. Near Dark was one. Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark.
I got that on Blu-ray.
I got that on DVD.
Yeah, you have to buy that on Blu-ray. And it's also, it's like $80 right now. So if you did
Is
not
it
buy
bucks?
It, yeah, because they have not released it in a real long time.
Oh, my
and
God.
And so if you have it, that's great. Hold on to it.
you can borrow it if you want.
Maybe.
You couldn't buy Paris is Burning for a long time. It was like 360.
Yeah.
Because it was considered an educational film.
That's streaming now, though.
Yeah, now
it's
streaming.
On Netflix.
But it's,
now
it's
streaming, but all my
slow.
Clothes don't fit no more, and I can't drop like that. No.
I bought a special pair of slippers to watch this movie in, and my feet have swole from running around trying to find it. And now my size 18. Okay, I'm done.
How do you think I'm going to dye a cat orange again to match my ball gown? First of all, that cat did not take well to that.
The cat was crying the whole time.
Second of all, my neighbors called the police on me. So just because it's streaming now, what am I supposed to do with all these parakeets? I made special underwear I could do the splits in. And now you're going to take it off the market? Fuck a cocoon.
Oh, yeah, Splunderwear.
That's right.
That's good stuff.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, April, you were saying something.
Is it important? I don't know.
Always important. It depends. I mean, isn't that part of what, like, prosperity, I guess? Like, you know, there's movies that need to be kept.
around just to be able to live on?
I think all movies should be kept. If you look at the stats, it is people of color and women whose movies do not make that jump and are not streaming.
Oh, so wait a minute.
I immediately thought of, like, all right, if we're going like in 19, whatever year Cocoon came out.
Yeah.
If we are thinking of the top 100 earners that year, I don't know how many of those movies have people of color as leads because they just weren't making that many movies with people of color as the lead. So it's like already that audience is gone.
Yeah.
So
am I
going to race to go see Cocoon again when I'm salty that I can't watch Mi Familia anywhere?
Well, that's the thing.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't think that he should be stopping at the 100 greatest earners because I think that he should just be looking at the greatest reviews.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Ooh.
Fantastic. I mean, that's where you get the women and people of color who made one movie and, you know, it never got seen, but it was, you know, really reviewed quite well, and then you never get to see it again. It's lost. And that's the way I felt about Wanda, Barbara Loden's movie that's now finally getting its due and it's opening in theaters. 40 years after it got great reviews and then just disappeared. And then they finally restored it, and now people are getting to see this. But she only got to make one movie, and that was it, and no one would ever give her a chance again. So, I mean, that happens quite often. So you guys could also just go to video stores, too. Those exist.
What, what now in a who, hey?
When you say video, you mean digital?
I mean video.
Video. Now, how does this...
There's a circular thing, a flat circular thing.
Oh, Laserdisc.
Laserdisc, yes. I was just talking about Laserdisc on Twitter yesterday. I miss my Laserdisc,
yes, of course.
I miss my Laserdisc. My clock is Laserdisc. You know what I'm saying?
My clock is Laserdisc.
That probably looks fantastic.
Bro, you want to see bullet holes in all the beautiful, pristine glory? Woo! Get your ass a motherfucker. Clockers on Laserdisc, yo. I have clockers thoughts, man. When we get to the Spike Lee section, I got clockers thoughts.
Okay.
All right. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking Black Klansman. Y'all, you're listening to Who Shot Ya?
Hello, I'm Oliver Wong, DJ, scholar, and journalist.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes, music supervisor and stiletto devotee. And we host Heat Rocks, a podcast where we invite our favorite musicians, writers, and scholars to talk about the albums that have changed their lives.
Morgan, what exactly is a Heat Rock?
It's a record that's like hot fire, combustible.
Basically, just a really, really good album.
We've taken a deep dive into Nigerian funk from the 70s.
He kind of had like a bad reputation in town as just being like a sketchy dude. And he was just making music that for thousands of miles around him, he was the only person doing anything like that.
1980s teen comedy soundtracks.
This soundtrack always felt the same to me as like when I would find a great blazer at a thrift store that I was like, oh, this is going to be me now.
We've talked about Prince, Boys to Men, Kendrick Lamar, and everything in between. Heat Rocks, every Thursday here on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Why can't we be friends?
Is that your name?
That's my new name, like Meta Peace.
And I'm Baron Vaughn.
Oh, today we are talking about Black Klansman. Why can't we be friends? Would you give us a synopsis of the film, please?
Okay.
A brief synopsis.
A guy by the name of Ron Stallworth infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan with the help of other police officers in a small town, Colorado City. Through his work, he is able to take the Klan down. And by down, I mean to a local pie shop where they engage in recipe sharing. And it's at this point that Stallworth gets a cape out of his back and says, I'm a Marvel character. He flies through the sky, meets Wonder Woman. He
looks. Wait a second.
Wonder Woman?
This is your movie. Isn't it?
And it could be your movie, too. Don't forget, I got them bootleg versions for you.
Oh. But the first part of that was right.
Okay. Rod Stallworth. I'll try again. Rod Stallworth infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan and brings them to a screeching halt.
Yes, he does. That's
a pretty
correct.
Good synopsis.
That's
you can put that in TV Guide.
That's it. That's what I'm looking for in TV Guide. Also, I've been waiting
but
for my issue of Don Rico.
Was also a black man, which makes this the sequel to Get Out. In Get Out, black people were used by white people, and in this movie, white people were used by Ron Stallworth.
Boom.
A black cop infiltrating the Ku Klux Klan.
And how he infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan is he is partners with Adam Driver.
Yes.
Adam Driver is the one who actually shows up to the meetings pretending to be Ron Stallworth. And when Adam Driver is not at the meetings, the actual Ron Stallworth, played by John David Washington, Denzel Washington's son, is speaking to them on the phone. So it's kind of like this dual identity relationship that is happening. And the mission is to, I mean, they're cops. What do cops have? The case? Is it a mission? No,
investigation?
The investigation.
Yeah, I think the purpose of it was to determine whether or not they are a threat.
And, which was interesting.
It's like,
let's figure out if the KKK.
Do we have a case of arresting all these people or not?
Yeah. Yeah. Turns out they did.
Yeah.
But then, it gets...
But there's a couple crazy, zany twists.
Some things happen.
Do you guys... I'm curious. My friend Candace Frederick, she wrote a piece for Slash Film where she was questioning what his intended audience was.
Mm-hmm.
She is saying, as a black woman, that she thinks that it is for white people. And that she thinks it is more for a mainstream white audience than it is for a black audience. And I'm very curious about, because I heard some people chiming in that they're like, oh, I could see that, actually. That, you know, he's trying to appeal to white people.
I could see that in a lot of different ways, because especially for the fact that really, when it comes down to it, there is one black character in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Ron Stallworth's character. We get glimpses of some other black people in the movie, but really the full supporting cast is all white people. It'd be like one black guy, and then like if you saw the names of the characters, I think it just kind of goes bloop, 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 bloop. It's like black, white, 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 black.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. So I could see that, definitely. But it's also, it kind of reflects almost what this mission was, in a sense, because Ron Stallworth is the only black person at the Colorado Springs Police Department, right? So it's almost like he, in the action of the movie, has to convince a bunch of white people about these other white people. So in a sense, the movie is kind of trying to convince a bunch of white people about these other white people.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Spike is Ron. Oh, shit.
Oh, go away. Wait a minute.
God.
Even though he's the fourth credited screenwriter.
I'm trying to get that Ving Rhames money, so I love what Spike does, Baron.
You sounded exactly like Ving Rhames right there. Blame it on the Rhames.
There was a dig to the female Trump supporter. I do think that he did cover that wife's involvement, which was factual, but he did make it seem as if he was sort of nodding to the white female Trump supporter.
Oh, God.
Yes.
There's a lot of Trump stuff in
there. There's a lot of Trump stuff, and there were moments where he was specifically, I did not care for the tongue-in-cheek, we would never elect a guy like that joke. I was just sort of
there was a couple of those.
Yeah. There were some that moments where you were like, Spike.
Mm-hmm. But it's theatrical. That's kind of what I chalk it up to. Like, it's very, there are moments that are very cartoonish in a way.
Yep.
But the absurdity, if you will, the cartoonishness is still tempered with the fact of real danger and of real violence in a way saying that, like, you know, hatred is absurd, but people do get hurt because of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's like a thing like Spike did, I thought, very well in the movie, was like just playing with all these different kinds of tone within a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where like the just the character herself, speaking of like the Trump white woman,
she is so scary.
Ashley Atkinson.
Loving,
shout out Ashley Atkinson.
Shout out to Ashley. Great job. This loving wife who is also the most evil fucking racist woman I've seen in a movie in a minute.
But she's wrapped up in this relationship with a hateful person.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what that scene in the bed, I won't say much more than that, is about like, you, if you connect with someone, if your relationship, because to be consumed with a hatred like this is an obsession. So if you're
relationship with someone is based on this hatred, it can only ever be absurd but still dangerous at the same time.
Mm-hmm. It's her, it becomes her identity.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
You know, so very much so.
You know, so you have black identity, which is just like, yes, solidarity, but then white identity is just hate. Like, that's just what it is in this film, and that's what she gravitates towards in him. There's that moment where she's in the room, and she's got this idea of, like, how she's going to kill people, and they're like, oh, yeah. And it's just the same thing that I keep thinking, like, when I think of, like, all the white women Trump supporters that have... having a hard time with, but like, it's choosing patriarchy, you know, over like racism. You know, just like, you don't get to choose the right, like, they're always choosing one over the other just because one of them is safe. But it, you know, it's like, in a, even though it's ridiculous, it's like a truthful look at how people are recruited for these things because they don't have anything, they don't have a culture. You know, like, a lot of people, like, white people are just like, I don't know, I'm just white. Like, they don't think about, you know, maybe like where people, their ancestors were from or anything, so they're just like, I'll just hang out with other white people who have assimilated and then we'll just hate everyone else. Mm-hmm. And there's just no, there's nothing filling that void.
Right. Well, yeah. And the and void can get filled with, I'm sorry. I was just thinking that, like, you know, there's the opposite side of that as well, because it feels like the characters in this movie, at least, are obsessed with their heritage. And so that becomes the cornerstone of most of the discussions, or what it is that they wish to protect, you could say, from miscegenation, a word that I haven't heard in a while. Integration and miscegenation. So it's...
Is that like a pageant winner?
Yeah, what year was that?
Miscegenation. She's everyone, technically. We put her DNA through 23andMe. She's 1,400 different things to me.
All right. So he can freestyle as long as he's an old man or if he's singing Broadway.
Or pageant songs.
Exactly.
Or pageant songs.
Exactly.
The Robert Goulet.
They call me Dirty Goulet.
Dirty Goulet.
ODG.
ODG. Come on now.
I love the cross-reference of black person that's going to get that joke.
Yes.
Half Robert Goulet, half old Dirty Bastard.
And you're my audience, and check me out at baronvaughn.com.
We just saw Baron Vaughn at the casino.
Oh, God.
He made a Carol Burnett Michael Jackson joke.
Oh, God.
You guys ever tug on your ear to say goodnight to your mom, but then your emblazoned glove scratches it? This is Carol Burnett Michael Jackson. What the heck were we even talking about?
Well, I'll bring it back. I'll bring it.
Ooh, what about Boots Riley's thing? We didn't cover that.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Boots Riley has been a critic of this film. He criticized the film in a tweet that he's since deleted. He said, after 40 years of cop shows and cop movies, did we really need one more movie where it's supposed to be about racism, but the cops are the actual heroes of the film and the most effective force against racism? End quote. End tweet quote.
Right.
As soon as the movie was over, I was like, Spike just kind of made us, in today's political climate, Spike just made us empathize
with the police.
And to me, I found that kind of genius. I was like, that's pretty brilliant.
I felt like he opens the door for all types of black people to fight in the way that they choose to fight as long as they fight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Boom. Son, oh, real talk.
All right.
Oh, you were waiting for some wacky character to show up, weren't you?
He does that sometimes.
But Brandon, he'll just drop some truth in the middle of the character.
Yeah, you're like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Take that with you, son.
Is Harry Potter not a metaphor for all childhood development? Are raisins not just old grapes?
I remember when I first became aware of my wand, I couldn't lift anything. Nothing could win Guardian Leviosa, nothing. Leviosa, you know what I mean.
I want you to hit it and quit it. Okay, thank you.
Can I get two times?
Thank you.
Oh, good God.
This is like if the three kings of comedy was black nerds.
Jeez. Yeah, but you know, and I feel like what Boots is saying, because it's technically, this is the movie that was made. So we're talking about a movie that was made. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Boots is asking,
should this movie have? Should it have been something?
Yes.
Also, yes. I'm sorry to be so articulate, but should it have it ever been something?
There is this thing that if somebody smacks you with chocolate chip cookies day in and day out and it's hot, it burns your face, despite the fact that it is delicious, that when somebody makes a movie about somebody who makes chocolate chip cookies, you go, why are we making movies about chocolate chip cookies? They the enemy.
Yeah.
So I get that. But we do have to put all these things out into the ether. And the story is, again, about a dude who fought differently. Mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah, it had to be made. It should have been made.
Yeah. Hmm. I agree.
And by us.
Yeah.
You know? It should have been made by Jordan Peele and Spike Lee. Yeah.
Well, let's go around. Baron, at the end, we ask everybody if this is a movie that people should screen or stream or skip. So I'll start with you. Do you think people should screen this, stream it, or skip it?
Oh, and what do you mean by screen it?
See it in the movie theater.
Oh,
actually go to the theater and see it.
I think see it in the movie theater, yep, definitely. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Certainly go see this in the movie theater. It'd be nice to make Spike a little money. It'd be nice to support Blumhouse. It'd be nice to support Jordan Peele. It is what you wanted. You want greats to come together.
Yep.
So we did that for you. So show up, all right?
Oh, yeah, just skip it. No!
Why do you look at him?
I know. I'm the white woman in the room. I'm okay playing the evil one.
Blue-eyed devil.
My hands are brown.
Wow.
Wait. She a woman.
You right.
She suffer like us.
You right. You
got to remember.
My bad, dog.
We all got the same enemy.
I got a mom, too.
I got a mom, too.
What your mom got to do with me?
I got a mom.
I'm not trying to hear that, see. Sorry, April, what were you saying?
You should see it in a theater. And then also, maybe just be prepared for the end, because the end hit me even though that I knew it was coming. So
yeah,
I'm not going to say what it is, but just be prepared, sit through it, and, you know, don't pretend that you're going to go out and have some drinks and, like, laugh.
It's a punch to the gut.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I would definitely say screen this movie, sit through the credits, listen to that Prince song that plays.
Yes!
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
What song was that? At first, I thought it was How Come You Don't Call Me Anymore, which would have been perfect. Because I'm like, Prince at a solo piano. At first, it sounded like them. Like, wait, no, that's a different song.
That would
a different
be so
song.
Good. Oh, my God.
Oh, said, why don't you call me anymore? How do you get...
come you don't call me anymore.
You might recognize the Alicia Keys version, but it is a Prince B-side.
Thank you. Actually, you know what? I want to find out what the name of that is. We are going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk more about Spike Lee. We're going to talk about his career. I want to talk about more of the music that he uses in movies. So we'll find out what the name of that song is. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Who Shot Ya, y'all.
Hey, have you checked out the Max Fun Store recently? We've got a bunch of cool new stuff. For Bubble, we've got a t-shirt, buttons, and more. Reading Glasses fans will love their new library book-inspired shirt. And if you're a fan of beef, check back Friday for the debut of our Beef and Dairy Network merch. We've got all that and more from a ton of Max Fun shows you love. So go check out what we've got and buy yourself something fun at maxfunstore.com.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
me, Baron Vaughn. Hey.
Why can't we be friends?
And April Wolf.
Yes. We have spent part of this time talking about Black Klansman, but now we want to talk about the films and career of director Spike Lee. Spike's been around for a minute. He's made a bunch of different movies. I like to break down his films into four categories. I've talked about this here before. Movies that he does that are for the cause. You Do the Right Things. Your Malcolm X's. Then he just will come out and be like, yo, I can make a fucking popcorn movie. I got the inside man for you right here. Woo. And then he's got his comedies. She's Gotta Have It. School Days. And then he will just be like, yo, what if I remake Old Boy? Bam!
Yeah.
Yo, what if I make a movie and everybody speaks in iambic pentameter? What if everybody speaks in verse? Chirac, where you at?
Yeah.
Boom.
He takes risks.
He does take risks.
And he's comedy specials too, right?
I mean, he has done a couple comedy specials.
Yeah,
that's right.
Comedy specials. He directed the original Kings of Comedy. He directs music videos. He makes documentaries. He's made two amazing documentaries about Michael Jackson.
And the
Those
Levies.
Michael Jackson documentaries. And, of course, When the Levies Break.
And When the Levies Break. No. Four Little Girls.
I say Levies. Is it Levies?
Well, there's two of them. There's a Jewish family from New York
and Eugene,
that falls apart.
There's Eugene. There's Dan.
Oh, my God. When the Eugene Levies Break. That's right. That's about the flood of Canadians that come into the United States to make comedy, right? Yeah. All right. That's dumb.
So do you all have, I'm assuming we are all fans of Spike Lee from how we've been speaking about him. Are there any one of those like genre of Spike Lee films that specifically resonate with you?
Well, you know, I probably Do the Right Thing is probably my favorite Spike. Well, Malcolm X and Do the Right Thing are my two, I guess you could say, favorite Spike Lee movies. Do the Right Thing is a Greek tragedy. Mm. It is a Greek tragedy. Yeah, yeah, it has the form of a Greek tragedy. Literally has a chorus.
It does, yes.
And so, and I liked Chirac. I'm doing quotes for the listeners. There's so many problems with that movie, but again, I give them points for the ambition and the audacity to make something like that. And there's a lot of great stuff and a lot of great style. And then there's a lot of stuff I'm like, all right, this did not come together in the end.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the attempt. So it's kind of like I look for movies by Spike in which he can address an issue of the time. Mm-hmm. I guess you could say that's kind of what I look to Spike to do sometimes. I get concerned about his relevance, if you will, because he is an older person and he also is relatively well known and wealthy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like there is a point where you are disconnected, I could say, from what are the real issues or from what younger people are doing in the streets.
Yeah.
I feel like that's why Chirac had a lot of controversy in it. Because I it seems like literally everyone I know from Chicago is like, man, fuck that movie. Like, it just seems like the consensus seems to be he did not consult with anybody from Chicago about this movie. If you're going to make a movie about Chicago, you should at least talk to someone from Chicago.
Yeah,
about
Ricky
it.
Was
yeah,
right
I'm,
here.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, right Spike, here. Man, I'm looking at my pager and it's not blowing up. I will say I enjoyed Chirac until the third act. It has some third act problems for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it did feel like this is somebody who is observing Chicago.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like somebody from Chicago made that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't bother me because it's also just such a stylized movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that's like another category that we can add to this. I like how you said, Baron, ambitious. Like sometimes Spike will just fucking swing for the fences, yo.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Chirac was a swing for the fences. I was talking to somebody today about Girl 6, and I was like, at one point, fucking, it starts raining telephones. Like, what am I looking at right now, Spike?
You know who wrote that screenplay, though? Susan Laurie Parks. You know who Susan Laurie Parks
she
is?
She did, yep.
She is a brilliant Pulitzer Prize winning, Tony Award winning playwright. I like that he even got together to like make something that she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it falls apart in a lot of ways.
He's kind
of
like in the way that like David Bowie used to just like work with who was like really cool at some time and just kind of like ape their style and kind of like glom on it and like make it theirs. You mm-hmm. know, that's the kind of thing that he is really good at, I think, is actually collaborating.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So sometimes like, you know, his vision gets a little like stuck because when you get too much power, then, you know, people are like, hey, maybe you should like cut out like 5 minutes here. He's like, no, you can't. And then if you collaborate with someone, then maybe you get to say, like, perhaps you should shorten this a little by 15 minutes or something.
Yeah. Yeah. He does. What he's trying to do is so very difficult that nobody else has ever tried to do it.
Yeah.
So he stumbles. But he really starts off with the funeral. You know, he always starts off with a really heavy subject, tries to get us to laugh through it, shows us huge characters. If you look at Do the Right Thing, it is super tragic, but he gives us these incredible cartoon characters, the old men who are sitting by making jokes. Sweet Dick Willie.
Yes.
He gives us Radio Raheem to get us through these really hard, you know, ports, mm-hmm. basically. So he stumbles, but it's because he's trying to ride an elephant on a tightrope, you know,
yeah.
and kudos to him for that.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you get to judge a filmmaker by how many people they've inspired as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he's the one taking those chances, then he's opening the doors for other people who get to do. I mean, like, look, like Boots Riley gets to make his movie
right.
because, you know, Spike Lee made some weird shit.
Yep.
Yeah. I want a world where Boots Riley I want a world where both of them are making movies and it coexists.
And I think they should collaborate.
They should. Okay. And it was crazy that Boots had anything to say about Spike Lee, because Boots' last movie was very, very influenced by Spike Lee.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely.
So it's odd that he said Spike
Lee. Yeah, I feel like these...
He said it was influenced by South American filmmakers. He doesn't even really even reference Spike Lee as his.
West Coast got that rivalry. David Fincher, you next, Fincher. Get your bitch ass.
Oh my God. David Fincher is a friend of the show, bro.
Yeah, tell Paul Thomas Anderson he next.
Oh, come on.
You
next. Friend of the show, PTA.
PTA, fool.
You are a star.
Paul Feig ain't getting no relief neither in them suits. Want to run around town looking like a pimp.
I got three pieces of hurting for you. Meet me
Come
at the tie bar.
We know where you live, Melissa McCarthy.
That's hilarious.
We're going to do you like Biggie and Puffy. Take out your star, Paul Feig.
God.
Jesus.
Wow.
My man.
I respect that Boots says that, but he's still influenced. There's no way.
Yeah. It definitely is.
You can't live in the United States and have seen a Spike Lee movie and then not be influenced by it.
I agree. April, is there one kind of those genre of Spike Lee movies that resonates with you or that you look most forward to?
I mean, I really like the kind of fun, like, I do like Girl 6. I do love the kind of absurdity of Do the Right Thing for sure is still at the top. I think just the colors of it, just like the brightness and like the vividness of everything. The story just doesn't hold back on anything. Mm-hmm. I think like Malcolm X is great, but I think that I'm just looking for more, like She's Gotta Have It, that kind of thing. So yeah, that's kind of my jam.
No, I hear you. I would say I love my favorite Spike movie is Malcolm X. That is a 2 hour and 57 minute movie that
it
I can sit through.
A 3 hour movie.
I can sit through over and over and over again.
And Spike Lee gets to be friends with Malcolm X in the movie.
Oh, I mean, the layers
that
happen.
He gets to be Red Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The layers that happen in that movie are amazing. And I feel like that was like just one of those big steps that he took in his career where, like, it's when even though he was not given all of the money that he was supposed to have been given to finish that movie, but just from that angle, like being like a kid, I remember like realizing like, wait, Michael Jordan is helping Spike make this movie? Magic Johnson is helping Spike make this movie? Like when fucking Indiana Jones ends, you don't see like Steven Spielberg and like his boys in the credits like, yo, we did this, because they never had to like face that issue. So like knowing this was a guy who went to all these, these prominent black people and got them to help make his movie the way he wanted it made. I was like, this is my guy. Yeah. This is my guy. The fact that he, before Malcolm X came out, he was like, skip school and go see Malcolm X. That's my guy. That's my, like, that's the kind of artist that I can get behind.
Yeah, I gotta shout out School Days just because it's the first time.
Classic.
It's a classic because we got to see that within the black universe there were two different camps. Mm-hmm. That black Greek life actually represented black life in terms of some people feel like this is the vision and this is the journey, and other people are like, fuck that vision, fuck that journey, this is what being black's about. So it was interesting to me.
You talk more shit than a little bit. Back to Mother Africa. That's bullshit. Without question, we are all black Americans. You do not know a goddamn thing about Africa. I am from Detroit, Motown. So you can watch Tootsie your monkey ass back to Africa if you want to.
We didn't really talk about it much, but I was just like, I just got to throw School Days in there real quick.
No,
but
totally.
You get Dear White People from School Days, though.
Yes,
there's a direct descendant from that. So.
There's a really great conversation that happens in Black Klansmen between Ron and the girl who is the leader of the Black Student Union.
Yeah.
Where they
My
talk
goodness.
About
pitiful,
Shaft.
Pitiful that we don't know
I
her
know,
name.
It's awful. It's awful. They talk about Shaft versus Superfly.
Yes.
And I loved that scene.
Conversation?
That conversation is amazing. And that is a conversation that I have with myself, being Latino, and being Cuban, when we put Scarface up on this pedestal. And on some days, I'm like, fucking A, Scarface, that's what's up. And on some days, I'm like, what that dude represents right there is the least attractive parts of our people. But somehow, it is still part of the conversation. So the fact that those two characters were able to have that conversation in that movie, in that, like, amazing shot, that, like, it starts off, they are way in the corner of the frame, yeah, and we just watch them slowly walk towards us. Yeah. It was like, off. Yeah. I love that so much.
Patrice.
Ah! God damn it!
I just looked it up.
Thank you.
I think her name is Patrice Dumas.
Okay.
Which makes me go, was that supposed to be like Lumumba and Alexandre?
I'm pretty sure it's pronounced dumbass.
Is that from Shawshank Redemption? I think it's
Rich Talarico, right?
Yeah. Oh, is that great commercial.
Oh, yeah. That commercial. Yes.
Pretty sure it's pronounced Dumas.
Oh, Mr. Dumbass, I'm your man. Yeah. It's pronounced Dumas.
That's boneheaded.
I remember that commercial.
Was it? It's a root beer commercial, right?
Yeah.
Remember
when root beer had commercials?
Oh, man.
I love my Mac.
We would stay home for A&W debut.
They would interrupt the broadcast.
Right.
I don't care that Married with Children is on. We got a new Bark commercial to put out. All right. What the heck were we talking about? I'm
Spike
sorry.
Spike Lee. No, we're good. Yeah, we're good. This thing is still completely on the rails.
Again, I like that he... Yes, okay, you're right. You're right. I like that he swings and misses. Some of my favorite misses.
Okay, yes.
Oh.
Yes.
The definitive miss for me, if for Spike Lee, She Hate Me.
Didn't even see that one.
Have you seen this?
No.
Have you seen it?
Basketball?
No, that's He Got Game.
That's okay. He Got Game.
No.
She Hate Me is Anthony Mackie, and it is not my favorite movie.
Okay.
And it has to do with, it starts off about being about whistleblowers, and that's what Anthony Mackie's character is like, blew a whistle at this corporation, but then he's laid off while there's this investigation happening. And so what does he do is that he has sex with a lot of lesbians to get them pregnant.
Why is this happening?
And I was like, well, Spike Lee doesn't seem to know any gay women here.
Like, wow.
It's kind of like he was saying, like, all gay women need. Yeah. I think we can all agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
is
no.
the dick. And I was like, well, this is not, that's a miss. That's a miss for me.
He's had an
See
issue.
It. See it. And we'll talk about it next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Off podcast.
He's had an issue with representing women in movies.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
Oh, yeah. Even in the movies that I like, it's just like, oh, like she's got to have it. I still feel like, oh, you know, he raped her.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, And I mean, I know that he fixed it in the TV show a little bit, but it's just like, I mean, that's just still part of that legacy where you're like, even if you're like representing these characters, you still don't quite know them. I don't know.
We have a clip from She's Gotta Have It. Can we play that? Can we listen to that?
What about Nola Dawn? What do you want to know? I thought she was a freak. You know, freaky dicky. You asked why did I continue to see her? To look like a retard? I'm not crazy. Sex was death. Nola had the goods and she knew what to do. Look, all men want freaks. We just don't want them for a wife.
Oh, shit. And he uses the R word there, too?
Yeah, I know. I heard that as well.
You're like, okay.
Couple of red flags.
It's up the time.
Couple of red flags. But I'm not saying
that as a defense. I'm just like, that's a thing that people say as a defense. I also just want to give a quick shout out to Ernest Dickerson.
Thank you.
Quick shout out, the DP of She's Gotta Have It, the DP of Do the Right Thing, the DP of Malcolm X, who kind of created Spike's look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no other way to say it.
It's true.
Yep. Yep. Not that.
I'm out. Peace.
No, he's leaving. It's weird.
Everybody, watch the Bosch. Ernest directed some episodes.
One last question for people out there, because I also think because Spike is an older director, people might not be as familiar with his work. If you could recommend one Spike Lee movie for people to watch, what would you recommend?
One Spike Lee movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be Malcolm X. Malcolm X is also a collaboration with someone who was dead at the time, because
is it Bill Duke?
It's Bill Duke. No, it's not Bill Duke. May he rest in peace. But it's James Baldwin. James Baldwin wrote the screenplay.
Whoa, that's right.
There's a screenplay that James Baldwin wrote. about his friend Malcolm that never got made, and Spike got that screenplay and refashioned it into what is now Malcolm X. So it's kind of like it's a collaboration beyond the grave.
Yep.
And with Malcolm at that.
Yeah.
So it might be Malcolm or Bamboozled.
I'm down with Bamboozled, dude. I think Bamboozled is underrated.
That's where they got the accent for Black Klansmen.
Is Bamboozled.
The accent that Wayans used was also the accent that Ron Stallworth
is
used.
Is that right?
Oh, really?
They went down to Paramount's lot. They got it out of wardrobe. They were like, we're going to need a couple hard R's. Harder R's.
It's a very strange performance from Damon, but like really interesting at the same time.
The network does not want to see Negroes on television unless they are buffoons.
Have you ever thought about just quitting?
I have a contract. The only way I get out of that is if I get fired. And that is what I intend to do.
He holds up his finger and uses a monocle. Am I right?
And then you got to give it up for Tommy Davidson.
Yes.
And then the namesake. Yeah, namesake of my son, Savion Glover. And who else is in that movie that's interesting? Mos Def?
Mos Def is in that movie. MC Search is in that movie.
That's right.
Jada Pinkett.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Bamboozled is great.
And it's a movie that's about, and it's very, was it 90s or was it 2000? Because he also shot that, like, with digital camera before anybody was doing that.
He was on that kind of like, oh, we can just roll. We can just film now. You don't have to, like, wait for the cut.
But it is about images. It really is about, like, black images. And that's it's so Spike in that way. And you will be angry at the end of it. That's why I can't even watch that movie anymore. It just gets me too worked up.
I always
that
reach
New
for
Jack
it.
City, I don't even want to touch it. Seriously. I can't. New Jack City makes me cry inside, and I can't do it.
April, do you have one that you would recommend? You're the film critic here.
I mean, honestly, if you're going to recommend something to a younger person to convince them why Spike Lee is a person that matters in their, you know, film vocabulary, then it has to be Malcolm X. Hmm. No matter how much I like the kind of, like, poppier types of films that he does, I think that one just has like the gravitas that says, oh yeah, that guy's fucking important. And then hopefully you get to like find all of his other films that are a little bit, you know, kind of funnier and lighter.
I would say Do the Right Thing. And then when they're done watching Do the Right Thing and they get ready to leave, I go, sit down. And then I would throw Malcolm X.
You got another 3 hours?
Exactly. Yeah. You ain't leaving yet. Close the door. Lock the windows.
And what up?
This is why your uncle stutters. And then put Malcolm X in.
It's also to form about a person that doesn't look anything like who they're playing.
Yeah.
Which is Denzel's performance.
Yeah.
But it's... So it's like a textbook.
I mean,
film acting performance. Lost to Al Pacino for Son of a Woman.
Son of a Woman.
And let's also not forget that the other biopic that year, which was Chaplin. Robert Downey Jr. was nominated for Chaplin. So those are the people that were in that category. Denzel, you know, Robert, RDJs,
right.
And then, of course, Pacino took it for Son of a Woman, my least favorite performance of Al Pacino's.
Yeah. Well, this was clearly not enough time to say everything we wanted to say about Spike Lee.
It's true.
But I'm glad we had this conversation. It is almost time for us to go. But before we leave, we got our staff picks for y'all. Every week we ask a panel to recommend a movie to you. It can be anywhere. It can be in the theater. It can be streaming. It can be... Actually, I think those are the only two options. Get that or book. You know what? What laser disc should you buy, dog?
I got this new thing called Getflix. It's like Netflix, but it's way cheaper. I'm also doing the movie passes if you're still interested.
Basically, you give me $15, I sneak you in.
That's right.
15 minutes after the movie starts.
Unlimited.
Meet me on the side of the building. Meet me on the side. Around the corner from the theater.
The way the movie passes run, though, I would believe that Brent actually is movie passes, though.
You got to trust me. Helios and Matheson, y'all got to trust me right now.
Wow.
April, what do you got for the people this week?
Because I'm writing a feature on the female gaze for Rolling Stone, I'm doing...
Rolling Stone? Yeah, girl.
Out.
That's what's
that
up,
amazing.
Yo. That's what we got on the show, y'all.
Damn.
That's what we got on the show.
My papa was one of those. Sorry, go ahead, April.
So,
great.
I'm recommending Point Break.
Yes.
Point Break, Catherine Bigelow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
That's why you wanted to get Near Dark, too, huh?
Well, no. I did an episode with Karin Kusama for Switchblade Sisters, and so we had to do Near Dark for that. But this is a fantastic movie that I think people think is cheesier than it actually is. I mean, like, of course, there's some cheese with Keanu Reeves' performance in this. But the cinematography and the direction of this and the what I'm writing on is the intimacy of her action sequences. It had never been done before. They invented a new camera for it. You know, they had a snorkel lens, and they were getting very close, and they were kind of finding the humanity in these characters as their bodies were moving. And so it's a really sensual, very sexy movie that is very much all the female gaze. And it's an action film. It's one of my favorites.
That's what's up. I've never seen Point Break, actually.
Oh, it's great, dude.
It's wonderful.
I'm literally going to watch it now.
Yeah. Can I give a shout out to an underrated Catherine Bigelow joint?
What's that? Steel.
Blue Steel, yo.
Jamie Lee Curtis playing a cop.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Blue Steel is amazing.
I thought of Real Steel, and I was like, she directed that Hugh Jackman robot sock 'em, rock 'em, sock 'em up?
I was thinking of the Shaquille O'Neal Steel movie.
Oh, that's just Steel.
That's just Steel. Guys, I mean.
Not to be confused with Remington Steel.
Thank you.
Starring James Bond.
Pierce Brosnan.
Baron, what do you got? You got a stat pick for us?
Yeah, I just looked it up on my phone.
Okay.
This movie, you can find it on Netflix right now. It is a movie called The Final Master. It's from China. It's a big country in Asia. And it is, I don't want to say it's a kung fu movie, but it technically is a kung fu movie. It's as if the Coen brothers directed a kung fu movie with Guy Ritchie's editor.
Oh.
So it has a feel because, you know, the martial arts movie is like such a huge blockbuster kind of thing, form in China that this, whoever directed this, they were trying to do it in a different way, in a way that was a little bit more, almost what I want to say, spared down. Kind of from like the big Jackie Chan gigantic movie where we can afford everything ever. But it's done really well. I think it falls apart at the end. But a lot of the fight scenes, that's why I like kung fu movies, because the choreography for a fight scene is always where there's a lot of interesting camera work and a lot of stuff that you don't see in the United States. So this is a movie I've been recommending to a lot of people, The Final Master.
Okay. All right. And it's on Netflix.
It's The Final Master. Oh. 2015 is when it came out.
Oh, that's great.
Go see Crazy Rich Asians, the people and the movie. Mm. See if you can support. They'll make more. It'll be great.
That's what's up.
I'm really excited about that movie.
Yeah. Everybody is.
I watch the trailers and I'm just like, my heart is feeling good.
Also, you know, in-laws suck. We all know that in-laws have the potential to be very rough.
They can be difficult.
They can be very difficult, so you might as well get involved and see what's about to happen to your life and what you're going to do when this happens.
Yeah. You're right. I am recommending a documentary that I just saw on HBO called Kareem, A Minority of One. It is about the life of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which I learned I knew nothing about. I mean, somebody explained it to me perfectly. He was the Ali of basketball.
Yes.
You know, like, but not recognized because, I mean, you just learned, I mean, people thought that he was standoffish. People thought that he just didn't want to deal. I mean, he didn't necessarily enjoy being in the public eye, but it was because he was shy.
Yeah.
He was just a very shy man.
Mm.
But just fucking brilliant. Loved his family. We give all these props to, and this is not taking anything away from what LeBron is doing right now. I mean, build schools, bro. All that. I support all that. But I think right now we have kind of like the blinders on of like LeBron is the one who is changing and only he is doing it. Nobody's done it before.
True.
No, LeBron can do it because there was people before him who were doing it. And one of those people was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Documentary is amazing. I can't recommend enough. Kareem, Minority of One, streaming on HBO, y'all.
Nice.
Hey, next week we'll be talking about Crazy Rich Asians. I believe our guest next week will be...
Jenny Yang
and...
Jen Yamato.
And the two Jens, Jenny Yang and Jen Yamato. Thank you. That's going to be a super fun show. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews get a shout-out on the show. Like, oh, right now, Cohen Nar says... of encyclopedic knowledge and illuminating syntheses, woo, spiced with sharp but fun repartee,
okay,
and unexpected perspectives about movies and film culture, including peaks and insights into what's going on behind the scenes in an industry. No one can nail the relevant plot points and character arcs of a movie in 30 to 60 seconds, nor make you do a 180-degree reconsideration of a film you did not appreciate like Drea Clark. And after listening to the August 10th episode about The Spy Who Dumped Me, I am now living for the stars to align for April Wolf, Drea, and Ingo Kane to appear at the same time. That's what's up. Do you want to read this next one?
It's short, so
it's
yeah.
It's short, yes.
Sarah Mo21 says, 5 stars! Smart, funny people with interesting perspectives and, dare I say, hot takes!
Hot takes!
Hot takes!
Hot takes! Shout out to my DJ!
Hot takes, hot baby, this evening!
I need some hot takes, baby, tonight! Woo! I want to say thank you to two of the most amazing guests that we have had. Baron Vaughn, my man.
Hey, Ricky, well, happy to see you. Good to be
to
here.
See you. Thank you so much for being
April.
Here.
April.
Thank you guys so much.
Brandon Johnson.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you. When I heard Baron was going to be here, I was like, that baby can breastfeed itself. Get in the car.
As if I'm the one breastfeeding the baby. I'm not going to act like he hasn't tried. He sees my nipples and he's like, is there a point to these? I'm like, evolutionarily, no, my son.
I like that you already speak to him in Black Panther language. Evolutionarily, no, my son. No, get that vibranium and come closer.
Y'all got a comment or suggestion about this week's show? You can tweet us at WhoShotYaPod. You can send us an email at WhoShotYaMaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien.
Woo!
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher.
Ow.
This has been a production of MaximumFun.org, and that is what is up, yo!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.